broker to check on a rumor that could cause you to lose your good humor. When you see your next statement, you'll see which funds have paid off savings.
Your investments are now misbehaving. Your retirement prospects are caving because all of your hedge funds were run by Bernie Madoff. You need some help with your 401k. Your last accountant has just joined AA. Now you will have to scrimp. Could your funds be more limp if they were all run by a chimp?
Your pension should be fat, cause your broker once mentioned a potential new Apple invention. You'd be rich, but you thought, who'd want something called an iPod? You'll need some help with your 401k.
Your plan to quit work is now DOA.
No, you weren't very smart. Soon a new job you'll start.
Hello, and welcome to Walmart.
You'll have to live at the YMCA.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to Living in a Police State with Paul Butler. You can listen to this program at 96.5 FM, or you can go to accesssacramento.org, or you can download it from greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
You know, when the only tool you have is a hammer, then every problem looks like a nail. When the only tool you have is arresting folks and punishing folks, then every problem looks like a crime. So, yes, bullying is a big issue. We just got to be careful about how we deal with folks in elementary school and high school who make mistakes, and got to understand that there are better ways than locking them up to deal with those issues.
Carlos is calling on our Republican line from Aurora, Colorado. Go ahead, Carlos.
Hello. Thank you. I'm concerned about felon status. I knew a young man who graduated from college. They were having a party. They made a lot of noise. And they were smoking a little grass and called the police. And there was a single shot 22 in the house, and he got 5 years. Now he's a felon. He can't get a job for the rest of his life. You get even an arrest for something, and you're totally innocent. Your record, you can never get a job. You can never get a situation with benefits. These 40 million people that we have who don't have benefits are felons. We have 10 to 15% of the population who have no economic status. And this comes from the slaughterhouse cases in Cruikshank, established by the Supreme Court, with all their bigoted, biased racists that they've had for 100 years. They are 100 years behind the times. Thank you.
Paul Butler.
You know, one of the unfortunate things about locking so many people up is when they come out, they have records. And as a consequence of these records, sometimes they can't vote, they can't serve on juries, they can't participate in civil society, they can't even support themselves often because, you know, I'm this big progressive guy, but sometimes I think if I were the manager down at the local coffee house and I had a choice between hiring some fresh-faced kid from junior college or some guy who had this 10-year gap in his resume because he'd served time, I might even be tempted to go to the college kid. So we can imagine how difficult it is for folks coming out, especially when we put all these legal disabilities. So we know how to do better there. What folks coming out need is health care, they need jobs, and they need housing. And if they get those services, then they'll get out of this cycle that we have now, where over half of folks who get out in 18 months are going to be right back in jail. And that's not good for anybody.
Boring file clerk tweets in, Professor Butler, what do you think of the current Department of Justice, and are they working enough to change the system?
Well, I'm very excited by Attorney General Eric Holder. I think he's been one of the most proactive persons in the Obama administration on these issues. So he's one of these rare prosecutors who doesn't use his power exclusively to send folks to prison for as long as he can. So I'm excited by some of his initiatives, including telling prosecutors to go easy on certain kinds of nonviolent drug cases. So lots of other attorney generals have insisted on these draconian plea bargains, where basically they've required their lawyers to throw the book at prosecutors. Eric Holder understands that we don't only have a problem with too much crime in the United States, we have a problem with too much punishment. And so he understands that in some communities, it's not only crime that has destroyed families and neighborhoods, punishment has done the same thing. So we have all these folks, especially women and kids, who are doing time on the outside. So again, it's important and powerful to have a chief law enforcement officer who understands that he's got to have some integrity and even a bit of grace and fairness. You know, there's that famous sign on the Department of Justice that the government wins its case whenever justice is done. And I think he understands it's not always about convictions. Sometimes doing justice is doing something other than just fighting for someone getting locked up.
Still an individual tweets in, Mr. Butler, our federal government and Bill of Rights designed to protect the individual from government bullying. Any way to return to that?
Well, the Supreme Court really has that ball's in the Supreme Court's court. So I have a friend here in D.C. who's a police officer. Let me tell you about this game that he plays. It's when I go on a ride along with him. It's called Pick a Car, and it's designed to show how much power the police have. So I'm riding in a squad car, and he says, pick any car you want, Paul, and I'll find a reason to stop it. So I'll go for a Lexus or Mercedes to let those guys know what it feels like. And he's a good cop. He only stops if he has a legal reason, but everybody, you can't drive more than two blocks without breaking some kind of traffic offense, and then he stops the car. You know, and if you're black and you get stopped, then often, you know, it's get out the car, spread eagle, you get the pat down, the whole thing. But again, I think he's comfortable with that power because he thinks he uses it in a fair way. But when we look at how the Supreme Court has interpreted the Bill of Rights, the Fourth Amendment, a lot of folks would say the power that my friend has as a cop to stop pretty much anybody he wants, that's inconsistent with what the framers intended for the Bill of Rights.
Reservoir God asks, is the Washington Journal going to discuss the hip-hop part of Paul Butler's theory for justice, which is the subtitle in your book?
Thank you, Reservoir. So a hip-hop theory of justice is this idea from Nas and Lauryn Hill. If I ruled the world, I'd free all my sons. It's KRS-One saying, officer, officer, overseer, overseer. You need a little polarity? Check out the similarity. It's Erykah Badu saying to her drug-dealing boyfriend, what you gonna do when they come for you? I guess I'll see you next lifetime. So it's this very exciting idea that's being laid down in tracks about how criminal justice system really works. And it's ground level reporting from what Chuck D called the Black CNN about ways to make communities safer without locking up so many folks. You know, I started teaching and I had to learn all this philosophy about criminal law from folks like Immanuel Kant and Jeremy Bentham. And at the same time, I was listening to hip hop, which I grew up with and I loved. And I heard this conversation between these classic philosophers and Snoop Dogg. So I wanted to connect Foucault and J. Cole and Kanye West and get them talking to each other. And that's why, one of the reasons that I wrote this book. They say you should write about what you know. I thought nobody understands both criminal justice philosophy, how it really works in the streets based on my experience as a prosecutor and as a black man in hip-hop like I do. So that's why I wrote Let's Get Free, a hip-hop theory of justice.
Iron Patriot tweets in, there are too many black people in jail because they commit too many crimes. Welfare dependency takes away their pride and ambition.
So there are some crimes that African Americans commit disproportionately, and it's a big issue, and we have to work on ways to make folks who are at risk for committing those kinds of violent crimes and street crimes appropriate interventions. And again, Prison is certainly an appropriate response for somebody who's going to rape or rob or kill. So, again, I'm not one of these folks who say that nobody, including no black people, belong in prison. Very concerned about victims. And, of course, most of the victims of African-American criminals are also African-American. You know, crime is pretty segregated in this country. So, actually, if you're white, you're more likely to be victimized by a white person. But we also know for drug crimes, that is selective law enforcement against African-Americans. So I teach on a college campus. I know that lots of kids out there are indulging. And according to the government, to the National Institute of Health, blacks don't use drugs more than anybody else. But Peter, if you go right down the street here to the Department of Justice and ask who's locked up for that crime, about 60% are black. So 13% of people who do the crime, 60% of people who do the time. So certainly the war on drugs has been waged in an unfair and biased way.
Paul Butler, the jobs report for December just came out. The unemployment rate has dropped to 6.7%, 74,000 jobs added in the month of December. Can you correlate prison incarceration and crime with economics?
Well, it's not a perfect correlation, and we have to note that almost always the African-American unemployment rate is about twice that of the overall rate. But obviously, there's connection. So, you know, folks think if you are a dope boy, if you listen to some of those rappers, they think you're going to be, you know, you're going to be have all that swag. You're going to have all those gold chains. In fact, the guys who are on the corner, the retail sellers of drugs, they make about the minimum wage, and it's dangerous work. So if those folks could get jobs that pay living wages, they would love to get off the street. So when you get opportunities to be hired, and you don't have to have a college degree. You don't have to have gone to an Ivy League school to get out of risk for going to prison. Really, all you have to do is to graduate from high school. So an extremely important intervention, Peter, is to have ways that help our young women and men graduate from high school. If they get that high school degree, their chances of getting locked up dramatically decrease.
Great Speeches and Interviews is your source for in-depth information about the economy, foreign peace, climate change, and more. Now with more speeches and more interviews than the leading brand, also contains tasty tidbits of humor and song, fortified with more debates than the other brands, and all comparisons are fictional, broadcast on Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. on KUBU 96.5 FM.
Isn't anybody going to change the story? Isn't anybody going to change the world? Isn't anybody going to bask in glory? Isn't anybody going to say the word? Start giving and not taking. Start living. Start faking, start hoping, not fretting, start leading, not chasing, start talking, not walking, start living and giving, start loving. Start loving. Doesn't anybody want to change? Doesn't anybody want to change the world? Doesn't anybody want to bask in glory? Doesn't anybody want to say the word? Start giving, not taking. Start living, not faking. Start hoping, not dreading. Start leading, not chasing. Start talking, not walking. Start loving. It's like a trip I'm on. Like a trip I'm on. anybody gonna change the world? Isn't anybody gonna bask in glory? Isn't anybody gonna save the world?
Now, back to Living in a Police State with Paul Butler.
Next call for Professor Paul Butler comes from Becky in Stanton, Michigan. Becky, good morning. You're on the Washington Journal.
Good morning. This is an issue that has been bothering me for years and years. I'm 64 years old now, and I'm really thankful that things are a little better. But they're not better enough. And I know personally, not a lot, you know, my daughter's dated some black boys, and I always make them sit down and answer all my silly questions. I ask them first. And
what do you ask, you know, them? Becky, what do you ask them?
I ask them about issues like this, about, you know, is it true that you get pulled over, you know, just for being black? And the one boy told me that when he goes to pick up a date, she drives because he doesn't dare drive because he got stopped once. And he didn't, you know, he didn't have anything in the car or anything, you know. But, you know, they've said that they know people that have just said, officer, could you please tell me what I've done? And then they get accused of, what is it, harassing a policeman or something? And
all right, Becky, I think we got enough to work with there. Professor Butler?
You know, Peter and Becky, so many young black men have stories like that. Pretty much everyone. And in some areas, like New York City, it's even worse. So there's been a lot of attention paid to the stop and frisk police tactic there that a federal court just ruled was unconstitutional. You know, the effect on young black and Latino men of that constant negative attention from the police is corrosive. It ends up making a lot of folks literally hate the police. And, you know, the police have some of the most dangerous jobs in the world. You couldn't pay me $1 million to do what they do because I'm not that brave. But we really don't want folks hating the members of the community who are supposed to protect and serve. But that's the effect. You know, if the police grab you, they touch your body, it makes you feel small. It makes you feel like you have no rights that the government is bound to respect. And that's not only a human rights issue. Once again, it's a public safety issue. Because the way that the police make cases, especially the violent crime that most citizens are concerned about, is like what you see in Law and Order. They go from one place to another place talking to folks. So that means people have to cooperate with the police. And if you're someone who you can't drive a nice car or walk down the street without being scared that you're going to be stopped for no reason, you're not likely to cooperate with the police. When they come wanting to talk to you about some crime, you're not going to want to help them because you're both scared of them and you really don't like them. So like all of these smart on crime interventions, when we ask the police to be respectful of citizens, to treat folks nicer, and certainly not to stop people just because they're black, that's about civil rights, but it's also about public safety and making our communities safer.
Hans is calling from Longmeadow, Massachusetts. Hans, good morning.
Oh, good morning. Hello, Professor Butler. Thanks for taking my call. Congratulations on the fantastic book. I actually have been using it for the last couple of years in a urban economics course that I teach.
Thank you.
In an economics course, Hans, explain that.
Yes. So, and that's where I wanted to take the discussion, although the two comments I wanted to make have already more or less been addressed, but we'll see if we can deepen them. In urban areas like Detroit and Cleveland, elsewhere, the economic conditions are such that there are depression-like circumstances, 30% unemployment, and so on and so forth. Now, those conditions are playing into a lot of the criminal behavior that we have because of lack of opportunities. And Professor Butler mentioned education, which, of course, is important. But it's not just the education, it's the economic conditions itself. So although we can appreciate Attorney General Holder and what he understands and so on and so forth, until these economic conditions are addressed in these urban areas, we're going to have the same sorts of problems emerge over and over and over. The other thing, I did want to bring in your subtitle, and you've already addressed it in a very interesting way, but if you could talk about No Snitch and especially hearing notification. I think that that might be of interest to a number of people, and I'll take comments offline.
Thank you, Hans. Thanks. Professor Butler?
So the economic piece is so important. In New York City, they have these blocks that are called million-dollar blocks, because if you look at just how much money the government is spending on this one block to lock folks up, it's $1 million. And a lot of people have said, what if? What if we spent that money on job training? What if we spent that $1 million to improve schools, to provide people with treatment when they have problems with drugs? Wouldn't that go a lot further than just spending that money to lock people up? So urban economics, absolutely, because there's an economic cost, a huge cost, to locking up 2.5 million people, big opportunity cost. So the caller's right. I do have a chapter in the book about this concept called jury nullification. And so that's an idea that I actually learned about as a prosecutor from the jurors in the District of Columbia. You know, most of the jurors at this time were African-American, and I got schooled by the experienced prosecutors when I was a rookie that if I had a drug case and the defendant was a young black man and it was a nonviolent drug case, the jurors were not going to send that boy to jail, no matter how well I proved my case. And the reason was they didn't want to send another black man to prison. You know, if you go to Superior Court, Criminal Court in D.C., today, just like back then, you would think that white people don't commit crimes. White people don't use drugs. They don't get into fights. They don't steal from their offices because they are utterly absent from criminal court in D.C. And lots of the jurors knew that's not really how the world works. And so the way that they were protesting that was when it was a nonviolent, victimless crime, like a drug offense, sometimes they would acquit. So when I started being a law professor, that was the first thing that I wanted to study. And I found out that what they were doing, acquitting people because they didn't like the law or thought that the law was unfairly applied, that's actually a constitutional power that jurors have. It was part of this system of checks and balances that the framers set up. You know, they were scared to death of a government that's gotten too powerful, too out of control, based on their experience with the British crown. So they wanted ordinary citizens, folks from the street, to have the last say about whether someone gets locked up. And so what I recommend in Let's Get Free, that's been the most kind of controversial, provocative chapter of the book, so I hope folks will let me know what they think about this idea. But I suggested for some nonviolent drug offenders, even if you think they're guilty, if you're a juror, you can use their power, use your power to just say no to this failed war on drugs. You don't have to lock up everybody just because a prosecutor tells you you do. And there are some campaigns now, actually not too far from here, Peter, at the metro stop where jurors get off, there's a sign that says, if you think the criminal law is locking up too many people for nonviolent offenses, for drug crimes, then vote no if you're a juror. So I'm a former prosecutor. Lots of people don't like that. But one of the reasons I think it's okay is because jurors have good sense. So I never had cases in which if a juror thought that a murderer or rapist did it, that they would acquit. If they had reasonable doubt, they would certainly acquit. But, you know, they know it's not safe to have those folks in the community out and about. But for lots, again, these young people who are getting caught up in this criminal justice system for making dumb mistakes, sometimes jurors are willing to give them a second chance.
now for something completely different.